Yeah, so the term was actually derived around like the 1980s or so. So it was a term that researchers actually coined when they were trying to distinguish between individuals with autism who did or did not have an intellectual disability, purely for the purposes of including someone into research studies. But of course, over time, what we've seen is that people have adopted the language into everyday speak. Clinicians and researchers have been using this term very frequently in their papers and in talking about people with autism, but it's actually not an official diagnostic label, so it doesn't exist in our diagnostic manuals at all.
What do we think it means? So how are we interpreting it?
So it's the way it's been interpreted is that someone who has this label of high-functioning autism comes with the expectations that they're able to do everyday activities just like their peers might be able to do because they have an average or expected average IQ for their age. But actually what we do understand now from this research is that someone who might be called high-functioning actually might not have the functional abilities that we presume that they might have.
So it's when we hear this term, like if you think, you know, you'll hear people say high-functioning alcoholic.
Right.
So you'll immediately go, well, they suffer with, you know, alcohol abuse, but they can still work and carry out a function and be, I don't know, I'm not really sure what it means, to be honest with you.
So when we're talking about functioning, we're actually talking about the ability to participate in everyday life. So to be able to go to work, to go to school, to do your everyday activities the way we would expect. And that's what people assume that that means. But when we talk about autism, the expectation that just because you have an average IQ for your age doesn't actually mean that you can function in the same way as your peers.
Yeah.
And actually what our research shows that individuals with average IQ for their age actually have far worse functional outcomes than what we would expect.
Because I sense that when we use it as an expression, we kind of feel like you can park your illness or whatever it is aside for 8 hours. Whereas if you've got autism, you can't say, I'm going to leave it at the school gate and I'll pick it back up on my way home. That's not true.
Exactly. It's an identity. It's something that someone has. What it does mean, though, is that some, particularly in things like school context, someone might assume that someone doesn't need support in their school. So just because someone is cognitively able to take a test doesn't mean that they don't need support with how to note take, how to follow instructions, how to deal with a change in routine, how to deal with even getting to school on public transport. Those are things that we might take for granted in a same child of the same age, but actually for some children on the autism spectrum might be really challenging.
You're listening to Dr. Gail Alvarez from the Telethon Kids Institute. She's also at UWA talking about the term high functioning in relation to people with autism and why that term needs to be banned, I guess, because it is misleading. And you say in the research that you've done, it's harmful.
Well, I guess it can be harmful in the expectations that it carries and in the way that it might be used to be able to determine eligibility for things like funding or services. So if you assume that someone is high functioning, you might not advocate for them to have the same level of supports and services at school or in transition to employment, those sorts of essential services that somebody else might get if they have had an appropriate functional assessment that tells you what services they need.
Sorry, Dr. Alvarez, you also said at the beginning that it's a term that doesn't appear diagnostically in how you assess somebody who has what is it? Sorry,
autism.
I beg your pardon. But what terms do you have? What can we replace that term with?
Well, actually, we already have specifiers and we have had them for quite some time. So we can diagnose someone with a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder with or without an intellectual impairment or autism spectrum disorder with or without a language impairment. So we do actually have terms for that. But, of course, I think it can be easier to fall back on something that seems a bit easier to say. It's a bit shorter. It's also something that people can understand a bit easier. But it actually, if it was an accurate term and it accurately was describing someone with where we had done a functional assessment, that would be fine. But actually it's based on an IQ assessment, not a functional assessment.
It's jingoistic, isn't it? I mean, it's an expression. It's like every year we look at the dictionary to see what expressions have arrived. And I would think high functioning is one that would have turned up, I mean, you say in the 90s, that all of a sudden we hear it, we use it everywhere.
But I had a conversation with a friend who has a child who is autistic. And this person said to me, but they've told me that my child is high-functioning autism. And that almost, that with that came a sigh of relief. And I wonder if with that came an underestimation maybe mm-hmm. of what is ahead.
Yep. So it can dramatically mean that you underestimate the challenges that somebody might experience. And it also means that you might not also assume that someone also has strengths as well. So we all understand that people on the autism spectrum come with lots and lots of strengths as well as challenges. But we often just don't do appropriate assessments or to be able to adequately measure those.
There are TV shows like The Big Bang Theory and The Good Doctor. Have you looked at these? Because there are characters in there that are described or portrayed as high-functioning with autism. Have you looked at those? Did you look at that in your research and the impact that that's having?
So we haven't personally, but certainly something like The Good Doctor has been the subject of a recent research article that actually showed that for people who hadn't watched The Good Doctor, who watched the pilot, they watched a couple of minutes of it or the first little bit of the episode, they actually had better attitudes around people with autism and had more positive expectations of the skills that somebody with autism might have. So representation is really important in our media, but accurate representation is also really important. And what's good about The Good Doctor is it shows someone who has quite a high intelligence and lots of strengths, particularly in being able to be employed and being able to use exceptional cognitive abilities in a useful way that can benefit others, but also shows the challenges of having an autism diagnosis, particularly when things don't go to plan, when there's a sudden change in routine, that kind of thing.
So will doctors listen to you? I mean, how do you, because you're saying after, you know, 20, 30 years, you want this term to no longer be used or be banned, if you like. I mean, how do you make that happen?
Certainly it's about increasing awareness and understanding about what this term actually means. We certainly know from members of the autistic and autism communities that this is a term that they don't prefer and would like to see us stopping being used. We just need to understand how to increase that message in the community. So doing as much awareness around this term is as much as we can do.